Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Tuesday, September 21st. Thanks for joining us. I'm April Austin.
And I'm Jingnan Peng.
The headlines struck a provocative note. Harvard's atheist chaplain, it's another sign of America's growing secularism. And the new chief chaplain at Harvard, an atheist. The stories fed concerns that an elite liberal university was pushing its secular agenda onto faith-based campus organizations. And this at a time when studies show fewer young people are affiliated with organized religion. But the story turns out to be quite different. The man who galvanized such attention, Greg Epstein, was elected unanimously last spring by 30 colleagues to serve as president of Harvard Chaplains. It wasn't until news reports about him surfaced earlier this month that people took to social media to voice objections. Mr. Epstein, who wrote the book, Good Without God, What a Billion Non-Religious People Do Believe, is considered by his colleagues to be a thoughtful and experienced chaplain. The humanist tradition to which he belongs is more concerned with living a moral life through self-reflection, discussion, and good works than with adhering to doctrine or believing in a higher power. One of Mr. Epstein's peers, Pete Williamson, an evangelical Christian chaplain, wrote a defense of his colleague in Christianity Today. The article, Why I Voted for the Atheist President of Harvard's Chaplain Group, explains that the media had mischaracterized the president's role, which is to advocate on behalf of the entire group, including evangelical Christian, Protestant, Roman Catholic, Jewish, Muslim, and other chaplaincies. The mission of Epstein's chaplaincy is not to convince people to become atheists, but rather to serve students who find themselves without faith, of which there are many at Harvard, Mr. Williamson writes. He also argues that the cooperative, interfaith nature of the group, which does not influence doctrine or hold sway over the independent chaplaincies, has made Harvard a more welcoming place for students who are religiously affiliated or interested in becoming so. Now, today's stories. Our first story. As a candidate, President Biden promised to change direction from President Trump's America First to multilateral cooperation. But on foreign policy and the border, observers see some surprising similarities.
President Joe Biden aimed to define his foreign policy on his own terms on Tuesday in his speech to the United Nations General Assembly. He called for global unity against threats such as the COVID-19 pandemic, cyber attacks, and the climate crisis. He defended the chaotic pullout from Afghanistan, saying the U.S. is shifting from relentless war to relentless diplomacy. But it's one thing to have the aspirations of a high-minded internationalist and another to accomplish difficult multinational goals. And many observers have been surprised to discover that in several areas, the new U.S. president's foreign policy looks a lot like a continuation of his predecessors. Mr. Biden withdrew U.S. troops from Afghanistan, as former President Donald Trump tried to do. Many Trump-era tariffs remain in place. The recent forced deportation of Haitians from a crowded makeshift camp in Texas seemed particularly reminiscent of aggressive Trump-era southern border controls. GOP Senator Marco Rubio of Florida says, "Some of the foreign policies that were put in place by the Trump administration are things that made all the sense in the world. And I think once you become president and deal with the reality, you have to keep them in place." This story was reported by Peter Greer and Dwight Weingarten for The Monitor.
Palestinian leaders want to reset relations with the U.S. and press Israel for concessions. But this presupposes a popular mandate that many Palestinians say their leadership lacks.
The departures this year of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and President Donald Trump have created an opening for Palestinians trying to break their international isolation and improve conditions in the West Bank. So far, there have been modest steps, including an easing of immigration rules for undocumented spouses of Palestinians. But the resumption of contacts among Palestinian, American, and Israeli officials this summer raises the question of whether the Palestinian Authority has the legitimacy to negotiate on behalf of Palestinians who are increasingly disgruntled with their leaders. Their underlying fear is that President Mahmoud Abbas will negotiate away more of their rights in return for meager promises that fall far short of self-determination. That fear is tempering optimism about the possibility of future peace talks in the region. Hilba Burkan, an architect in Ramallah, says, "I believe we're all looking for a better, more comfortable life, but we don't have a leadership that looks beyond, to the day after the occupation ends. I question the whole point of returning to the same peace process." This story was reported by Taylor Luck and Fatima Abdul Karim in Ramallah, West Bank, for the Monitor.
At a time of hostile debate around policing in America, building trust is both risky and vital. The model pioneered in Racine, Wisconsin in the 1990s isn't a fast fix. It takes time, commitment, and real estate.
In the 1990s, Racine had the highest crime rate in Wisconsin and one of the state's most exhausted police forces. Tough-on-crime policies weren't working. The city couldn't arrest its way out of the problem. So the police department moved in. Developing an approach that's since been copied around the region, the police department in Racine identified multiple at-risk neighborhoods and bought houses in them. Officers stationed in these community-oriented policing houses were tasked to build local relationships, learn how to help, and act as a partner in solving problems. It worked. In one neighborhood, the crime rate fell 70%, part of a three-decade drop in the city's overall crime rate. Chief Maurice A. Robinson says challenges remain, but police have residents' trust. Today, he's trying to fill a staffing shortage with new officers who better represent the city. He says Black residents make up more than 40% of city residents. A few Racinians have already heeded his call. He hopes more follow, because the city is less safe when Racine and the Racine Police Department are divided. He says it can't be us and them. It has to be us. This story was reported by Noah Robertson for the Monitor.
Among the traditions upended by the pandemic are religious rites of passage. Yet some Latter-day Saint missionaries are finding that going virtual still yields personal growth.
Limited by the pandemic, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints scaled back physical outreach and intensified virtual proselytizing. In fact, some current missionaries say they've never knocked on doors. Instead, virtual outreach may include promoting their faith on social media via original posts, videos, and messages, teaching over Zoom, and collaborating with local members to update church profiles on Google and Yelp. For some, including Sister Kimberly Russin, who had been scheduled to go to Portugal, the switch was disappointing. But encouraged by her younger brother, Ms. Russin forged ahead. Now based in Colorado, she's shared her gospel with countless people online and in person over the last year. She says her faith has deepened, too, despite having to overcome heartbreak. Partway through her mission, the brother who had encouraged her died. Yet the pain of loss has been countered by something she calls sacred. After her brother's death, Ms. Russin began to notice how many of her contacts had also lost a loved one. Painting a promise of hope for others has in turn comforted her. She says, "What better to help you with grief than to turn outward?" This story was reported by Sarah Matusek in Arvada and Aurora, Colorado, for the Monitor.
Sometimes fresh ideas can seem ridiculous, but in Sri Lanka, a papermaker who incorporates elephant dung into his products shows that even wild ideas can pay off.
For three generations, Thusitha Ranasinghe's family navigated the world of international paper imports. But 24 years ago, the Sri Lankan printer had a revolutionary idea. What if he made his own paper with an ecologically friendly process that used local fibers? His choice of source material drew skepticism from others in his community. He planned to craft a paper out of elephant dung. The idea turned out to be far from absurd. In a country with 2,500 to 4,000 wild elephants, there is no shortage of droppings. And due to the pachyderm's incomplete digestive system, the heaps of waste contain a high percentage of intact fibers, making it a perfect raw material for paper production. What's more, the idea also managed to ease some of the conflict between elephants and locals by creating employment opportunities in rural areas and shifting local perception of elephants as a threat. The company sources its dung from Millennium Elephant Foundation, a non-governmental organization dedicated to the well-being of domestic elephants. Each day, foundation volunteers deliver 4 wheelbarrows full of fresh dung to the factory. This story was reported by Oscar Espinosa and Laura Fornell in Kegal, Sri Lanka, for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on Biden's bid for endless diplomacy. After his first speech at the United Nations as president on Tuesday, Joe Biden will waste no time practicing what he preached. With the United States finally at peace after ending its longest war in Afghanistan, he promised an era of endless diplomacy. Indeed, on Wednesday, he will lead the largest gathering of heads of state to address the coronavirus crisis. This Friday, he will hold his first in-person summit with leaders of 4 democracies in the Indo-Pacific. What accounts for his optimism about global-scale diplomacy? One clue came during a particularly emotional part of Mr. Biden's speech. He said the founders of the UN were able to break a cycle of major wars by their vision, values, and faith in a collective future. That led to decades of relative peace and growing prosperity. Mr. Biden is now suggesting that other cycles of pandemics, climate change, cyber threats, big power polarization can also be broken. He said, "Now we must again come together to affirm the inherent humanity that unites us is much greater than any outward divisions or disagreements." No wonder he speaks of a new era of diplomacy that will be intensive and endless. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thank you for joining us today. Come back tomorrow when we'll look at the Peace Corps, which is facing challenges to some of the core values that have shaped its existence for the past 60 years. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how it can be tempting to get overwhelmed by fearful what-if thinking. But getting to know God as entirely good replaces doubt and uncertainty with confidence, clarity, and healing. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Tim Malone, Tori Silver, and Pavithra Rajesh.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.